We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast coming at you on a Wednesday. It's our midweek show, and for the second week in a row, if I could just get the words out, we have Jeremy Cohen joining us for an additional episode because he is the bridge that is connecting the great divide in Knicks Twitter, in the Knicks universe, the one between myself and the man you know as Schwinnie Poo. He is the host of Pod Strickland. He is, all kidding aside, he's a great guy and someone I consider a good friend. He joins the show today. We look back at some stuff that we said before the season. We yell and scream about a certain Nick point guard, and we get into a whole bunch of other stuff. And the most important thing to note is this is the first of a two-part episode. So after you are done listening to this episode, go ahead and check out the Pod Strickland feed, and you will be able to find part two of this episode dropping. I'm pretty sure it's dropping tomorrow. It is dropping later today. It is dropping later today. Sorry. As my wonderful producer, shout out to Andrew Claudio. He's the man, is reminding me to say. So I've spoken enough. Without further ado, myself, Jeremy Cohen, and Schwinn. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School Podcast. He gets such an official intro. Well, one person gets an official intro. One person you know, and that is Jeremy Cohen. Jeremy, hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
I am good. I'm prepared to get yelled at, because joining us now.
You already know.
Just joining us now on the Knicks Film School Podcast. He is, the host of, Pod Strickland. The hottest sensation in Knicks niche podcasting, I think it's fair to say.
Biggest asshole, maybe.
As my daughter is never like this, and she's like literally crawling all over me. I think it's because I have you on. Schwinnie Poo, hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not coming from MSD headquarters like some of us, but... I'm doing pretty well. I'm happy that is today and not yesterday. I don't have to remember that Alfred Payton decided that he was fucking Gary Payton. And yeah, that's good to go.
So before we get in, so today's episode, we figured what better time to do a little reflecting and projecting. So we're going to revisit some predictions that we all made, or I guess more accurately, Schwinn is going to revisit some predictions that I made and yell at me for them. And then we're going to actually look forward to the weeks, months, perhaps even years ahead, and see what we could come up with as far as some things that we think are going to happen. Before we get there, though, Jeremy, I have to ask, as you're like George Costanza right now. Your two lovers are, it's like, oh my God, caught in my own web of lies.
Yep.
So what hat are you wearing right now? Are you wearing the Pod Strickland hat? Are you wearing the Knicks Film School hat? I need to know this.
I'm wearing the marine biologist hat, John. The sea was angry that day, my friends, like an old man ordering soup. That is my hat. I'm sticking to it. It's going to be great. But yeah, I thought, like, I'm the connector, and yet I'm not, because the fact that you guys get to yell at each other, or Schwinn gets to yell at you, has been brewing for quite some time. So I get a front row seat to it. It's beautiful. I feel blessed. I feel like this is the best George Costanza could ever be.
Jeremy's wearing one of those like 50-50 jerseys right now.
But I'll decide based on the end of the day how I'll feel. Like, maybe I'll be more 75-25. It all depends on how things go about.
So the pressure's really on. So for anybody who doesn't know, Schwinn obviously hosts the Pod Strickland Pod, which is awesome, and he's Jeremy has been co-hosting with him for a little bit now. They have takes, we have takes on here, so we're try to blend some of those takes together. How do we want to start this off? I mean, I feel like we all made different.
Let's start talking about Alfred Payton.
Yeah, we could start talking about Alfred Payton. So let's go back to where we all stood on Alfred Payton before the season started, because I think it'd be fair to say that he's been the biggest lightning rod of conversation over the course of the first half of the season.
Is it a lightning rod if, like, everybody other than, you know, eye test, fucking Tommy D Twitter, like, agrees that he's just not a good player? Like, forgetting if he's a good player or not, he's just not good for the Knicks. Like,
yeah.
Is that fair? Like, can we all just agree? I think everybody, even the people that defend him, agree with that mostly. So I don't think that's, like, a very controversial thing.
No, it's not controversial. Well, maybe lightning rod was the wrong term. He's been the topic of the most negative conversation, I think would be the easiest way to put it. You know, and I'm obviously the one who has to wear this because I got mad at everybody for having the audacity to get mad that they re-signed this guy for $4.7 million. I didn't think it would be this bad. I guess some people did think he would be this bad. Did you think he would be this bad, Schwinn?
No, I actually... So, like, my issue with it was... Because you... I think when you tweeted it out, what your take was like, the reason why guys don't want to come to New York is because, like, we were aggressively shitting on them.
Oh, that's an oversimplification.
It was... It may be, to be noted. But this is, you know, I'm not here to paint a good picture of you, pal.
I'm not here to talk about the past. Not here to talk about the past.
But no, like, that was more or less, I think, what my issue was with anything. I didn't like the signing. I thought that they could have just, like, been like, okay, no, we're just going to roll with what we, like, these young guys and figure it out. And I also thought that, like, I mean, but ultimately, the way I thought of it was like, okay, they wanted to have a veteran steady hand, somebody they could just, like, bank on being like, this is what he's going to do every night. And they just went with the guy they knew who, like, you know, look, for even now, for all the shit I have said about him, and I don't think he's, like, everybody's favorite on the team, but he's not, like, a problem. He's not a locker room cancer or anything like that. I don't think anybody's like, I hate Alfred Payton, other than us, obviously.
Us meaning, like, the collective Knick fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like, yeah, I definitely didn't think he'd be this bad. I thought, I mean, like, who could predict that he would just become a substantially worse distributor. Like that's ultimately the biggest problem right now, is it's not just like he's not providing spacing, because we knew that coming in, like that was not on the table, but he's not passing the ball well at all. And like, I know that Tibbs, I'm sure that Tibbs has told, I know what he wants from his guards, because he's always wanted his point guards to be scorers and penetrators and kind of like up the ante, right?
Put pressure
like,
on the rim. That's all.
Yeah, like he's always wanted that. But I think he's taking that too literally. I don't think when Tibbs is like, look to score, that means ignore everything other than trying to score. And it feels like a lot of times that he has completely lost the balance, and I don't know what's going on. Like the thing with him and RJ is just weird. Like, I don't know what that's about. And like,
it's something though. It's a thing.
It's definitely something. And what is also interesting is I feel like half the time when I watch him on the floor with Randall now, I feel like Randall wants to fucking punch his lights out. So I don't know what's going on with that. I can't say I thought that signing was terrible when it happened. I still don't think it's terrible. I think Tibbs is making it terrible. And that is a Tibbs issue, which is like, if you're the front office, this should be information you bank away when you're making future moves, because you have to be now picking up on like, what are his tendencies, regardless of like, does Tibbs know the
data? Meaning Tibbs' tendencies. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure he knows the data. I'm sure he knows that the, you know, the lineups with Elf suck. And I'm sure he's aware of that, but he also knows that Peyton is able to penetrate consistently and get into the paint. And ultimately he is going to err on the side of that over like IQ being a rookie. And so, yeah, it's for us, we're like, oh my God, like these 15 games that he's had where he looks like fucking Jesus Shuttlesworth are the most amazing thing ever. But like, Tibbs is like, yeah, but like those other, you know, 20 games when he looks like a rookie, I don't want to deal with that. And I'm just going to keep this really shitty, like, you know, you guys ever have like those childhood, like a blanket your mom made for you when you were young or something? That
just, oh, hell yeah.
Forever.
I use it for my kids now. Yeah.
But yeah, but it's like you probably used that for way too long when you were growing up. And it's like,
well,
that's what Alfred is like. We've outgrown the need for Alfred Payne because at Tibbs's behest, at his requests, at his like, you know, call bullying of Brock Oller and calling him Hinky, they went and got him Derrick Rose. Okay, so you've got Derrick Rose, you've got Quickly. We've seen him run Burks at point. There's enough options here at this fucking point in the season with this fucking roster and everybody fucking healthy that we don't need to start Elfrid Payton, and we don't need to grandfather him in every night for 15 to 20 minutes and literally punt on what feels like the first 7 or 8 minutes of each half.
Society has advanced past the point of needing Elfrid Payton. And I think also,
yeah,
I agree with what you're saying, Schwinn, in terms of the drives. It'd be better if Elfrid Payton passed on more than 30% on his drives, which is an absurdly low rate, because if he's going to get to the hoop and he's not going to convert and he's not going to pass, then he's just clogging the paint and missing and then leading to fast break opportunities the other way. So, yes, I think it as well, like I was probably... I would be in the middle between where we were, if memory serves. Like, I remember John and I were discussing how, at least I certainly didn't like it, but I got that it was the best of the shit heap. And it still feels that way because, you know, Teague, Wanamaker, Shabazz, Napier, like all those guys that really wouldn't have done much, they still are either not doing much or they're not employed. So I got it. It was more just like, all right. And I was actually listening back to our podcast, John, right before the season. Because
with
I was curious,
on
like,
Knicks or
no, for Knicks Film School.
Oh, okay.
Because I was curious,
why are you coming for Alex Wolf's podcast, man?
Only because because we did a predictions podcast. That's what I figured Jeremy was referencing. But anyway, yeah,
I would have to go back to listen to that too. But I was thinking of just the one that you and I were on.
Yeah, okay.
And there were some gems in there. It was great. But yeah, there's just the gems. Idea of where it's like we felt that Quickly had proven himself to the point where he could be a starter. Tibbs obviously does not love rookies, so nor does he like them starting. And then, of course, yeah, there's the Derrick Rose acquisition, which I think also affects the trade deadline because the Knicks still made that deal. It's not like they just have had no roster turnover since the season began. So improvements are made, I agree, but it is worth noting, as you're saying, Schwinn, how Tibbs is going to utilize these guys, because if Elfrid Payton's going to have a worse year than he did last year, and last year wasn't fun, but to a degree that not even we would have expected, that's something we have to consider with the crop of free agents not being great, how you make those upgrades, him not trusting younger players, maybe the Knicks being more hesitant towards trading for someone. So right then and there, it's like, well, what options do you really have left? And I think that's something that we need to pay attention to moving forward, and keep a close eye on for the rest of the season to see how these roles might play out.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Schwinn, you vocalized it as well as anyone could vocalize it. Why? No, yeah, I mean, listen, as much as we fuck around with each other, we very rarely disagree with each other on substantive like basketball takes. I'm not going to stand here and be like, yes, Elfrid Payton's great. We're just all misreading the situation. I personally think, and I thought it was really illustrative when Austin Rivers, when he had the one interview, I think before the last time we heard from him, when he was like, yeah, I heard the Rose stuff in the preseason. It's like, it was only a matter of when Rose was going to get traded here. My guess is that the front office figured like, look, speaking to Tibbs, like, look, we can't, their asking price right now is too high. Detroit wants to see if maybe they'll catch lightning in a bottle with their signings and fucking have something. Give it a few weeks. We'll get Rose. By that point, you'll have an excuse to ditch Payton and, you know, do whatever the hell you want. And I think because they had a better record, and this is the other thing, and I've reported this, I'm sure other people have too, that like they didn't think they were going to be this good. So I think the real issue is that if you're Tibbs, how do you turn around and bench your starting point guard who has quote unquote led you to a 25-25, well, now 25-26 record. I'm not saying it's justifiable, but I could see that being the reason because you want to know why I could see that being the reason? Because in my mind, I can't think of another one. There's no other one that even conceivably makes sense because here's what I don't think. I don't think Tibbs is stupid. I don't think Tibbs is watches film and sees like something that's not real. He sees the defense as not being an actual real good thing. I don't give a fuck what he says in his post-game press conference.
Yeah, I don't care either.
So like, what's the reason? Do you have another reason, Schwinn?
I think the reason is, and I don't know if it's a Tibbs thing. I don't know if like the front office has, you know, told him. Like, I do think it matters that him and Julius Randle have the same agent. I definitely think that matters.
Julius and Elfrid.
Yeah, that is not some, like, I know that people don't want to hear that and they like, oh, it should just be based on merit. It's like, shut the fuck up. This is not like little baby basketball. Like, this is a business. You have to kiss some ass to get, you know, the deal you want. And look, let's be real. If the price of getting Julius to extend this offseason instead of waiting for next offseason is we have to bear through, this is like us, right? This is like in Shawshank when he's coming out of the fucking jail. That is what this season of starting Elfrid Payton is. It's just like 72 games of shit. Yeah. But at the end of the shit, if you're like, yeah, but Julius Randle is going to lock in at a much lower price. And that gives you like a clarity of mind, right? Because like, as nice as this season has been, I think there's still a lot of like uncertainty of what the Knicks are going to do. If Julius Randle locks in at the end of the season, now you're like, okay, Randle and RJ for sure, those are two guys that you're like, these are, you know, whatever we're doing, these two guys are central to whatever we're doing.
Yeah.
So everything, so it gives you kind of like, you know, two pillars to just be like, okay, now we know what we need around them, right? You need shooting, you know, you need an actual fucking primary, a penetrating guard, whatever, but you know these things that you need. So I think like that is part of it. I also think part of it is like Tibbs is an old school guy, okay? And who did Tibbs, you know, learn from? Who did he come up under, right? He came from Jeff Van Gundy. Yes. What is the craziest, most frustrating bullshit stuff that Jeff Van Gundy did after the Marcus Camby trade? You can go back and watch those playoff games.
Yeah.
This fucking
started Chris Dudley.
This fucking guy would play Ewing and Ewing, like, this is not prime Patrick Ewing at this point we're talking about like Ewing, who was clearly hurt, clearly not the same guy, and Chris Dudley, who is Chris Dudley, and he would, you could literally
poor Chris Dudley, wherever he is out there. I think he's actually made a nice living for himself after basketball.
I'm sure, being a fucking MAGA Republican. But like,
he's a congressman, right?
Yeah, he's MAGA.
Yeah, okay.
And but like if you go back, you can literally, I'm telling you, go back and watch some of those Miami playoff games or the playoff games in 99. There are games where like he's literally like Camby's killing it, but he's not allowed to come in the game until like the start of the second quarter or the start. It's the same shit. He's from the same, he believes the same things. That's why every single time Jeff Van Gundy says something about a player in the Knicks or about the Knicks generally or anything, you should listen, because yeah. They clearly still talk. They're clearly best buddies. So when Jeff Van Gundy before the season is saying stuff like, oh, I don't know about Mitchell Robinson, I don't know. And then all of a sudden it's like, and then all of a sudden in the middle of the season, Tibbs changes his tune on Mitchell Robinson. That should tell you like, yeah, no. Mitch did something. Like he's done something since Tibbs has been there that has made Tibbs to some extent revisit his opinion what he thought of Mitchell Robinson. Yeah. But yeah, like I do think that there's stuff going on with the whole Peyton shit that is beyond just like, yeah. And I also think like, yeah, you're probably right. I think there's like a lot of these older school coaches, I think, have this like whole, you know, like loyalty to fucking the guys that got us here kind of shit. So yeah, I mean, I don't know why he thinks Elfrid Payton got them there. I think you could argue that Peyton got them there, but not in a positive way.
If anyone's arguing that Elfrid Payton has helped their efforts this season, I apologize. I don't agree with you.
For what it's worth, I had the same thought, Schwinn, in terms of like, if you keep Elfrid, is that going to help Julius lock into something better, something beneficial? But then I had the thought of like, well, what if it doesn't? What if now we've had Elfrid Payton playing meaningful basketball for a team? Right. And then it's the idea of, well, why does Leon Rose have to say, like, throw a bone to CAA and Aaron Mintz to be like, here, look what we did for your boy Elf, because this guy ran CAA. So it's not like he has to give back.
Why can't he just already gold them, man? Why can't he just?
I agree.
The only other thing I'll throw out there.
You know that scene where he like write, like the guy gets eye surgery and he writes on the wall. He's like, can you read this? And it just says, get the fuck out. That's what he needs to do to Elfrid Payton.
Elfrid Payton.
Oh my God. I would love to just watch that.
But the reality of the situation is, I think we all agree, and then we'll move on to some of our other things that we said about some other players you just brought up on this team before the season. I think we all agree that the best version of this team, it doesn't have Elfrid Payton coming off the bench. It has Elfrid Payton out of the rotation, and he's rolling with, you know, Burks, Quickly, Frank. And that's why I think last night was so frustrating, seeing, you know, Kyrie just like, what's the meme where the children are on like the guy's lap, or like the child is on the guy's lap. It's like, I'm your daddy, that type of thing.
Oh, it's not the lap. It's like,
oh, on the shoulder. There it is.
Children should be nowhere near the lap in that meme, but I know what you're saying. Yes.
Well, whatever. It's kids in it. Okay. So that was Kyrie. Kyrie had Elfrid on his shoulders.
But not in Elfrid Payton. Like I'm sorry. I just got to say, like, that was the most ridiculous. I've been fuming about this the entire day.
You messaged me last night. You're like, I am going to have a rant. So that's why I was prepared for this.
I could not. Oh my God. Like, I cannot understand. You are getting absolutely fucking roasted the entire night by Kyrie Irving. There's one play right in the beginning of the first quarter where Peyton is like trying to like get all up, you know, right on Kyrie, bully him, push him around.
That was fun.
And then, mind you, Kyrie's not a big guy. Kyrie just bodies him into this, like under the rim, and makes a layup. That's like, just get the fuck out of my face with this shit. I can't deal. This guy's entire thing that everybody, oh, his defense is so good. What fucking defense does he play? Who is he locked down? Name me a star player Elfrid Payton is locked down. I can't think of one. I know that we got a motherfucker on the bench who did that shit when he was a string bean at age 19 at the Garden, 2-1 Kyrie Irving. Okay. Like, we saw this shit a month ago. The Nets were just toying with the Knicks, absolutely toying with them. They had Harden play the entire game, and they had Kyrie on the floor. Frank comes on the floor and neither of those guys wanted anything to do with him. They could not get past him. They didn't want anything to do with him. And you can go back and you can watch every single time Frank has come up against James Harden or come up against Kyrie Irving, he gives those guys problems. And
it makes them work. Whereas last night, Kyrie Irving was looking at Elfrid Payton like a buffet.
Randy made him work harder than Elfrid
Payton. He did. And for the clip about, you know, Kyrie, you know, like faking Randall out of his shoes the one time, like that was the exception, not the rule. Randall like kept it honest in front of Kyrie last night. But it was right there for them. They didn't take. And oh, the last reasoning I think that Tibbs might have is just the notion of like, and again, this is, I don't want to get into a whole thing, but like the notion of set roles, right? Which is why we don't see Randall at the five, which is why if you're going to have a penetrating, like,
okay, but that's bullshit though. Because if he believes in that, he has literally changed Frank's role like five times in the last month. Okay.
Out of necessity, I think, okay, when there's been injuries.
Is winning games a necessity? Because
I think he sees him at when if with a fully healthy rotation, I think we can agree that Tibbs sees Frank as a wing.
He needs to get LASIK then, because I don't care. Like, what is Elf, if you can move around Frank's role and you can move around Kevin Knox's role and you can randomly use Kevin Knox at the four because the Bucks are playing zone defense and you need to stretch the floor out. Like, if you can do these things with them, why the fuck can't you do it with the experienced vet who's been through all this shit and has experienced way more? I think that's a cop out. I won't accept it. I think
you know why. Because Elf is an older guy who's like with the agent and the whole thing.
Is a fucking loser. Like, I don't care. Like,
Elfrid Payton, if you're out there, what's the fake Twitter handle that we're all convinced?
Elfrid six or something? 63?
Or like Knicks fan 63.
Knicks fan 63. If you're out there listening or whatever, I could say that you're a nice guy. But
my last thing that I will say, right? I've heard this argument too, is that Elfrid, he does what Tibbs wants him to do. He plays his role. He listens to instructions. If that is the case, then last night is proof that that is horse shit, because the Knicks made a comeback in the fourth, which they shouldn't have even been down in that game. I'm not trying to pin this on Elfrid Payton. They didn't lose the game because Elfrid Payton. They lost the game because in the third quarter, I mean, I guess kind of Elf, but like it was Elf, RJ, and Randall decided in the third quarter they needed to turn the ball over as much as possible.
Rose couldn't shoot for shit.
Yeah, and Rose couldn't shoot for shit. And then in the fourth quarter, they decided they should not get any rebounds. But they closed the gap because they're down 109-103. Okay, and then Tibbs is just like, you know, fuck this defense. We're just going to double Kyrie as soon as he gets across half court every single time. Yeah. And so they do this. They get like four or five stops in a row. And then Elf, you know, I was so ready to like be like, man, Elf had really nice stretch from Elf here, because he hits
a couple of baskets. Yeah,
gets a
couple of baskets. Yep.
The 2-point game. And then he comes down and he does his Gary Payton shit where like he just turns around and he's like, nah, I don't need help. I got this guy. And Kyrie, I swear I could see like the drool coming out of his mouth, because he was just like, is this a joke? Like, I've been killing everybody one-on-one and now you've got this guy on me who doesn't even have his crazy floppy hair anymore to distract me. He just killed, but he literally changed the defensive play call on his own. Okay. And I know that, like, I think you or Jeremy or maybe both of you tweeted about like how Tibbs nodded. I think in that situation, Tibbs can't be like, I don't think he's going to start screaming like, fuck you. Like, get him. Like, it's just not going to happen. I think he's like, all right, Elf, like it's too late. That's what's happening now. Okay, fine. And, you know, what happened, and the Knicks lost a heartbreaker, and there were other reasons for it. But that play right there, like, that's an indication that he's not just like this fucking saint who just like, well, you want to know who does exactly what Tibbs wants, what will do exactly what Tibbs wants every single time he's on the floor? Frank Ntilikina. If Tibbs tells him to go out there and take a shit on half court, I promise you, Frank is taking an X-lax before the game and taking a shit at half court.
Jeremy, what were you going to say?
It almost feels like players like Frank or even Knox are penalized because they're versatile. Like, they can play in different roles, and yet because these other guys are stationary in what they can do, they're the ones who get preference, and also because of the fact that they are older. And it feels like, what was the main goal here? The main goal has been, yes, obviously win games, but we want to see development through it. And when you have a player like Frank who is in the last year of his contract, when you have someone like Knox who, like, who knows what's going to be next year when he's in his last year, how you're going to go about doing that, it'd be nice to incorporate them into the fold when your other guys are struggling. And Tibbs's agreement when Elf was like, no, I got this. I can handle Kyrie, to be like, yeah, you got it. It's on you. And then we see that he sinks a three, the game is over. And we just know that there aren't going to be any repercussions of any sort. It's really frustrating as a fan to watch. And, you know, so one of the things I actually managed to look up, with Julius on and Elf on, there have been 2,104 possessions. Jesus, the differential Christ. Has been negative 2.7. That's the 38th percentile. But with Randle on and Elfrid Payton off, 1,540 possessions, not that far off from both of them together, differential of plus 8.2. That's 90th percentile. So again, it's like the math is there. Tibbs is fully aware of it. And it seems like there's this kind of like unspoken rule of going in. And I know that Popper asked the question, but it seems like a lot of beat writers might be a little bit more respectful because they don't want it to come across as critical.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Criticizing Tibbs because that might not be the way about it, especially in a Zoom call. But it's right there. It's so evident that it just hurts to see games that are winnable just turn into losses because the margin of error is so small. And I understand, you know, like the reality is that the Knicks finishing sixth versus ninth or 10th, like it's not really going to matter, but it does in the sense that sixth, you avoid the play-in completely. And then seventh through 10, there's still seeding. You can get home court advantage. You can only play one play-in game versus two. There's a lot that's going on, and it just sucks to see the opportunities fall by the wayside because of a player who will not be here long-term.
I think it matters. I think every win matters, and I think that's a good transition to a couple of other guys on the roster. So I looked this up earlier today. Another appears a prediction that I had. This is in black and white. I wrote this in my appropriately named newsletter before the season. Predictions. My first one: RJ Barrett will lead the league in minutes, and Julius Randle will finish in the top 10. So as of right now, Julius Randle has played more minutes than anybody in basketball. RJ Barrett is, I think, fifth or sixth. Fifth. However, if you look up second half minutes played, so minutes played in the second halves of games, Julius Randle is still first, and it's the gap between first and second there is actually within a minute or two different than the gap between first and second for overall minutes played. So really the brunt of the minutes are in the second half. And second is RJ. So no two players in the NBA have played more second half minutes than Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. I think to your point, Jeremy, Tibbs, like the notion that like wins, like every win is worth its weight in gold to this man. And I think we're seeing now potentially that mentality to, you know, the downside of having that mentality rearing its ugly head. You know,
Look at the minutes distribution last, like since Elf has come back, the minutes distribution has made me want to fucking like punch.
Well,
the
what in particular about it has
quickly
gets
third, quickly got, oh, quickly playing last less. Night. Yeah. Toppin has like, he actually played well. He actually looked okay. And he can't get an uptick in minutes because the Minnesota game is a perfect example. It's a perfect example of this. The Knicks are up 13. Okay. Minnesota makes them, they get like an and one because they put Obi in a pick and roll with Taj. whatever, it cuts the lead to 10. Obi played well in that game. He was actually playing well in that game.
He was good.
His reaction, his adjustment in that moment isn't to call a timeout and just gather everybody and be like, hey, look, if they run that pick and roll again, do this shit. It's immediately got to take Obi out and put Randall in. And then within a possession after that, IQ's last contribution of the game is basically to dive on the floor to get a steal. Okay. And then he comes out and the rest of the game is just Vets and RJ. And basically, like, if you look at the minutes over the last, you know, however many games since Alfred Payne has come back, it's become increasingly just Vets and RJ. And it's like, Obi is playing less and Quickly has struggled. I'm not like debating that. He definitely has not been as good as he was, you know, for most of the, like, I'd say the last month or so he's struggled. Let's say post All-Star he struggled.
But really, in particular, the last six games, I think I looked up today, I think he's shooting under 30% from the field the last six games. So right. That's not been great.
So my point, though, is like, it feels like, okay, when Quickly struggles, he gets held accountable for it. And that is fine, and that is perfectly okay. I was not clamoring for Quickly to come back in the game last night. I was okay with him not playing much last night if the same standard applies to everybody else. But it doesn't apply to everybody else. And it's just bizarre because, like, Quickly, there's evidence in so many games this year, right, of Quickly being a driving force to us getting a win. Most notably was recently the Washington comeback, right? Yep. When Tibbs pissed away the end of just – the beginning and end of the first half, and then he pissed away the start of the second half because he had to fucking, you know, play the elf minutes and it's just stupid because, okay, this is another example. He starts elf and he starts Frank for some reason at the two with him when Burks is right there which makes no sense to me. And then Frank struggles and elf struggles. Elf stays as a starting point guard. He gets more minutes actually from that point on. And Frank is just out of the rotation. It is bananas. It makes no sense. And if the point is to win games, you're not maximizing your odds of winning games with what he's doing. And I just feel like he's losing margins now. Like, you can get away with losing margins against Minnesota, even though they didn't, right? You can get away with losing margins against the Orlandos of the world.
Washington and these bad teams. Yeah.
You don't get away with it against a team like Brooklyn, even when they're shorthanded, or like Milwaukee or Miami. Like, you're not going to get away with that. And it's also frustrating because we've seen him, when shorthanded, actually coach better, actually make more creative adjustments. Like in the last
Brooklyn,
in the last Brooklyn game, we were shorthanded. He played Randall at the five. He started switching screens more often. He's one of these football coaches that's like, well, I want to be a run first team. And it's like, yeah, but like fucking Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback. Yeah. But we want to establish the run. Okay, but Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback. It's like, what are we doing here? What is the...
Well, in fairness, though, he doesn't... Like, the offensive personnel is limited. I don't think any of us would argue that. And I think the guy, you know, it is quite clear that he relies a ton on the offensive personnel that he feels can actually do some stuff. Jeremy, did you think that the minutes thing was going to become an issue this year before the season started? Are you surprised by this?
No, not at all. In fact, I think we even talked about the idea of just how much they would play based on precedence. And, you know, I mean, again, like I'm conflicted on minutes because obviously you don't want to necessarily see your best players be out there. And yet the science doesn't necessarily dictate that playing them 37 minutes versus 32 minutes a night makes a significant injury, you know, for injury sake. It's not a huge factor. We just don't really have significant data. We have the knowledge that, like, you know, playing heavier minutes might hurt, but we don't know what the differential might be. And I always go back to kind of what Tibbs would talk about, which is if we play our best players, I think he said, actually, if your opponent plays their best players for five more minutes more and you lose those 5 minutes, that could be the difference of the game.
Yeah.
So you have to have those guys because we know that this is a limited roster. The fact that they've won 25 games to me is fantastic, even though I thought they'd win more than what Vegas had. I wasn't expecting it to be on pace, you know, 32, 31, whatever it might be. So I think keeping that all into consideration, they're doing a fantastic job of propping the team up. And that's great because what we've gotten out of this season has been an all-star and a second year player who has become very quietly, and according not to ESPN, but nonetheless, a very efficient and productive player.
I did not read that article, and I will not read that article.
No one should. I'm convinced they did it for reactions, but whatever.
You're not a big John Collins guy?
Yeah, you know, not huge. I'm not surprised, and I'm okay with it as long as they're okay with it, because I think another thing as well is this idea of, like, if these players felt that they were being run into the ground, then they'd probably speak up and they'd probably say to management, like, I could use a little bit less time. And I'm sure that the team would understand that, the medical team, and they would relay that message to Tibbs and saying, like, hey, these guys, they could use a break. And I'm sure Tibbs would somehow find a way to incorporate that, because there are moments where, like, with the blowout recently with Detroit,
yeah,
they certainly saved some time. They could have brought them back out there, especially when, even if the game got close to 20. We saw Tibbs do that at one of the home games. Which one was it?
It was another Detroit game.
Right, where it was like bringing them back. No, the Washington game, where he brought them back.
Oh, that too, yeah.
And it's the idea of, like, okay, well, they could,
happened a few times.
They could probably win without bringing these guys in, but I understand if you feel that the momentum is seriously on Washington's side, and that this game is, like, very close to slipping away, when we've seen in the past leads can evaporate just like that. So, you know, again, like, if the players are fine with it, I'm fine with it. And I know that Randall joked about it, saying, like, with the All-Star game, how he wasn't upset with his minutes distribution because of how many he's played. I fervently believe that there's at least a kernel of truth to every single joke, but I don't think it's to the point where Randall's like, I need to stop playing this many minutes because that's a problem. I'm sure Randall's thinking, like, I deserve to be playing these many minutes. I'm an All-Star, damn it. I'm contributing good basketball. I should be out there for as long as I can. And he's not going to get that opportunity in other places. And as long as he's happy with that, as long as he's comfortable playing those minutes, that's fine. That's okay by me.
Yeah, no, I trust their sports science. I don't know. Is it a department? I hope it's a department. I trust whatever those people are saying to Tibbs. I guess my area of concern is more like last night. And I feel like this has been a talking point for a while amongst some people. But for me personally, last night was the first time I felt like Randall being visibly tired impacted their ability to win the game. And I think you noticed that I went back and watched the last 4.5 minutes of the third quarter today. And just, like,
why,
you know, he was.
Why do this to yourself, John?
I know. Don't ask. Because I had nothing else to write for the newsletter for Wednesday. You know, he was missing
about, like, your favorite bourbons or something.
Maybe next week.
I've got.
I want to write
right
about
now,
your favorite bourbons, actually.
If you want, I've got an answer for you. Delicious bourbon. It's a nice maple flavor. It's beautiful.
What is it?
It's a local brand, so
we don't want to encourage underage drinking here, Jeremy.
That's true. Well, I thought because I was in the presence of adults that it would be a little less frowned upon. Like, you know,
no,
driving, you need your learner's permit as long as you're with people who are above 21.
You could, I don't
some
think
states you can go to a bar if you're 12 years old and drink, like Wisconsin. So, you know,
anyway,
this is Wisconsin. This is our Wisconsin.
This is our Wisconsin KFS. Anyway, yeah. So I thought he looked tired, and I thought he looked tired on offense in the third. I thought he was kind of dragging those segments of the game in the first half where him and Bullock were just like ping bang, you know, the ball swinging, like, that was beautiful. And that wasn't happening at the end of the third quarter, and it led to the turnovers and, like, ball getting slapped away and whatnot. And then the fourth, he was just, I don't know. I mean, Bondi tweeted out that he thought he saw him limping. I guess you could kind of see it.
MSG cut to him at his knee, like, kind of tinkering with the brace or whatever is there. So I don't know if it's necessarily exhaustion. It could just be the fact that as games go on, he feels that contusion more and more, and maybe it's putting pressure.
I think so. Like, here's my thing with the minutes stuff. Okay. Here's the top. I'm just going to read off the top 15 players. All right. Minutes per game in order.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going.
James Harden,
I agree with
Julius
this.
Randle, Fred VanVleet, Harrison Barnes, Domantas Sabonis, Damian Lillard, Colin Sexton, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jokic, Jamal Murray, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, Malcolm Brogdon, Pascal Siakam, Russell Westbrook. Like, the best. You look at that list. It's not all of the best players in the NBA, but it's a lot of very good players. And a lot of those guys are the best players on their team. They're basically the version of Randall for, you know, Washington, Toronto, whatever. Teams that don't have multiple superstars that need those guys to be on the floor to be competitive. If you go back last season and the year before, go look at Toronto's minutes per game guys. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, they had like three of the top 10. It was like Lowry, Siakam, and VanVleet, I think, last year. So, like, the best teams, no joke, guess what they do? They play their best players a lot of minutes. It's not that confusing. I don't think anything that is happening it doesn't really concern me that much. Like,
do you think it's more just like related to this recent injury that he has, which is what I'm hoping it is. That's my hope.
I think that's part of it. I also think this is like a really weird season, and the season is more condensed than it's been. And like, I mean, if you are in a position to win, like if there's an issue I have with Randall's minutes, it is probably that, like, I think he could probably buy him an extra minute or two of rest each game if he just staggered a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of my main criticisms of Tibbs coaching. And like, you know, look, ultimately at the end of the day, as much as we bitch about Elf and there's the margins and all this shit, like, he's probably winning a lot of margins that people don't want to give him credit for. Like, the team is majorly outperforming what's happened. I think we've seen plenty of evidence of player development and good coaching. Like, I mean, look at Reggie Bullock. He's shooting the highest percentage of shots from three of his total shot distribution of his career. You look at somebody like Nerlens Noel.
And they're good shots too, by the way. The shots really that Reggie takes, you feel like they're going
to
go in.
Yeah, like if you look at, like, I'm not even looking at a stat. So if somebody wants to look this up, check it. I would bet like 60 billion fucking Federation credits that Nerlens Noel has the lowest foul rate of his career. I would bet that.
I'll look it up real quick.
Yeah, like I think there's signs of like really good player development, be it young guys or rookies, that's happening on this, or young guys or vets, that's happening on this roster. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. And like, I think it's important that we don't lose sight of that because of criticisms, which I feel like is starting to happen now, where like he's kind of he's getting a little bit of a victim of his own success here, because the team has outperformed expectations so much. So I think people are like starting to be like, well, we should win this game. Like, why do we not win this? And I agree, like, he's making some mistakes, but let's be real. Like, there are, just because, like, for example, I think the Knicks would have won the Minnesota game if Quickly played longer. Okay. I have no way to prove that. I have no way to prove it. And all I can do is use the overall season sample to say, yeah, see, like, this would happen. But each game is different. Maybe I am missing stuff. I know I'm missing stuff that Tibbs is seeing. So like and also there's something to consider of like, there's parts of player development that us as fans will never, like, we won't understand it because we have never been in high leverage basketball situations in professional basketball organizations. Like, is there some benefit to him being a short, you know, like short-leashed hard ass with Obi Toppin as a rookie, with Quickly as a rookie, well, with RJ? Like, I mean, RJ Barrett.
We'll find out. We'll find out in a few years.
Right. And that's my point, is like we can be upset. Like, and I actually think what's really interesting is to look at I'm sure you guys have seen, right? Warriors fans are just like losing their mind about Steve Kerr, and he's garbage and he has no idea what he's doing and he's murdering James Wiseman's confidence and stuff like that. And he's, you know, they don't have, like, that he killed an entire season. They could have competed this year. And it's like, at least for me, looking from the outside, I look at that and I'm like, you guys weren't winning shit this year anyway, because Klay Thompson's hurt. Yep. And James Wiseman is a 19-year-old rookie who I didn't think he was the second best prospect. And if he was going to be good, it wasn't going to be in year one. So what are you really upset about? Like that he didn't eke out, he didn't fucking run Curry an extra 3 minutes per game to get like an extra 4 or 5 wins. Like, I don't know.
I would,
like,
be commending him for leaning into the tank. That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's easy. Thrilled. And I guess my point is, like, I think from the out, like, when it's not your team, it's easier to look at that some levity and like be like, yeah, that's it. I think for us, and I'm guilty of it too, for sure. Like, I think when you're watching a game like last night, and I wanted them to win that game so bad last night because you got handed a gift. Like, Harden was out, KD was out. Like, you know, I get it. And look, Kyrie was just, you know, he had one of those games. He was amazing last night. He had a superstar game yesterday. And it's frustrating to lose that. It sucks. Especially, it feels like that Minnesota loss really accelerated how shitty some of these losses feel now.
If we had gotten that loss, it would have dulled the pain, I think, of everything, of like what has come since, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I just think that like we all should at least accept that this is why people have been like, oh, this is why they should have made a move deadline. I literally don't give a shit, because ultimately when I zoom out, I'm just like, well, this season really isn't about like I want to keep assets so that when we're actually competitive and we're actually like in a competitive window, we have assets to make those marginal moves and to get a player like we don't need an Evan Fournier for this year. Like he's not doing anything for us this year.
We're in agreement on something. Yeah,
in 2 years, hopefully.
This is beautiful.
Hopefully in 2 years, we're in a situation where we're like, man, if we can get that 17 points per game guy to come off our bench, that can really get us into, you know, the top 2-3 teams in the conference or beyond, whatever it is. We're just not at that point. Like the moves, there was no star trade out there, right? Like the biggest name on the trade market that we could have gotten was Lonzo Ball.
And we don't know what the asking price was.
Let's just say I'm pretty confident we could have gotten him if we wanted.
Yeah.
If we wanted him, we could have gotten him.
Yes. If they wanted him bad enough, they could have gotten him, and it may have been the wrong. It may have been the wrong move given the asking price.
Right. And my point is like, this is not like the only star who got traded. Right. Was Vucevic. We were not. I don't think any Knicks fan is like
big air quote energy there for.
Yeah. I mean, I love Vooch, but come on. But like, you know, I mean, and I think there are Bulls fans that are already like, who are excited when they made the move, who are already looking at it like, are we sure this was the right move? Whatever. My point being is like, it's, you know, and you mentioned this too, from what I think, I don't know, I don't want to misquote you, so correct me if I'm wrong, from what you understand, they did not expect to be this good this year.
No. And right? That's, and to your, just
so, real, so, so I just want to say this and then I'll shut the fuck up. But I think they actually deserve, and Tibbs deserves credit for this, and Leon deserves credit for this, that they didn't lose their minds. They didn't get so caught up in the excitement of, you know, over outperforming expectations that they made a short. I think they kept the eye on the target. And I still believe, I believe this for a while, I think their target is when 2022 offseason comes around, we want to be in a position to trade for a star or sign a star or whatever. I think that is their goal, and positioning themselves for that is their primary target right now.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.